to the Eye on Football podcast, week one of the preseason 2014 year in the books. Will Brinson here with Ryan Wilson. Ryan, you and I were both up, as along with the rest of a pantsless America, waiting with bated breath for Johnny Manziel's entrance. Did it disappoint, or did it live up to your expectations?
Well, there's all. Look, first of all, I can't believe how big those homers were on the Browns telecast. Look,
what
I get
was
it.
Solomon Wilcots?
Oh, and it was Solomon too, wasn't it? Yeah. But the other guy, whoever he was, they both should be ashamed of themselves. They were actually, I think, at one point before Manziel went in, I think Brian Hoyer played an extra series or something, and they made note of the fact that Manziel put his helmet on properly along with the chin strap.
Yeah,
so, like, you know, all this hype, he comes out there and he goes three and out, sort of kill the momentum. But I thought he played fine. I thought he did a pretty good job. He didn't do anything that made you say, this guy's going to be terrible. And that, you know, I wrote about Manziel on Saturday after the game, and I had to keep reminding myself that, look, for the last 2 years now, we've been talking about how great Brandon Whedon's been in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
So just something to keep,
last 3 years, really.
Just something to keep in mind. But first impressions, I thought he looked good. And you know, poor Brian Hoyer, because it's on like Donkey Kong.
It is. I mean, that's what, you know, like it's almost too obvious, because you see, you know, the way, like, they draft Manziel, they're like, all right, you know, this is how we're going to handle it. He's not the starter. We're not giving him the job, blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as he gets in the game, like, all of a sudden, Bob Holtzman's on SportsCenter, you know, out of practice, he's like, sources are telling me, and I don't even know how Bob Holtzman has sources, but what it means to people, somebody's just telling us. You know what I'm saying? Like, Bob Holtzman's not Adam Schefter.
Bob Holtzman's the same guy who spilled the beans on the Steelers' special teams play, trick play before one of the playoff games.
That's right.
And Tomlin almost murdered him with his eyes afterwards.
Right. Yeah, so basically, Bob, people tell Bob Holtzman things and expect him not to report it. And
right.
He just keeps reporting it.
He keeps talking.
So, but anyway, he said somebody in the Browns organization told him he thinks Manziel's ahead of Hoyer, which to me was kind of the case, and this is why, is that Hoyer looked pretty good for a guy coming off an ACL injury. He threw a lot of passes high, but he made a nice roll out to his left and threw down the field and hit Miles Austin in the hands. Austin promptly dropped it.
Yep.
Hit Gordon in the end zone. Gordon dropped it. I think that the problem is with Hoyer, you know what his ceiling is, and it's Brian Hoyer. With Johnny Manziel, I mean, they use a first-round pick on him. He's he is the second most popular man in maybe like in the history of in the last 20 years in Cleveland sports. Already, he hadn't played a single snap of real professional football. How can you not play him?
No, that's right. That's exactly it. You know what the upside is on Hoyer, and what's the worst thing that happens with Johnny Manziel? You win four games again. So what?
Right.
You know.
I mean, what's the best thing that happens to Brian Hoyer?
You win six games.
Right, and so if you can win five games with Manziel, you're better than six games with Hoyer, right?
In the long run, I think so. And that's nothing against Brian Hoyer. He's just in a bad situation and has bad timing.
Yeah.
But for what it's worth, Coach Mike Pettine said that nothing's changed in terms of the quarterback competition, basically calling Holtzman out again. And he also said he hasn't named a starter for next week, but we all know it's going to be Manziel when they play the Redskins.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to give the week twos. Well, Pettine walked himself into a corner when he said he wanted to have a starter named by week three, which is a mistake, because now all of a sudden you have to start Manziel in week two, and you have to split up the reps the way you did in week, you know, and so it's it's dumb to me, because now you have a 1 week sprint to decide who the starting quarterback is, when it's something that probably needs a little more time. But at this point, I don't really care whether they go with Hoyer or not, because were we talking about this on the last podcast? But I mean, they got Steelers, Ravens, Saints, and the bye.
It's so, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Baltimore, bye, and then week five.
Right. And so at week five, they're going to be 0-3. And people are, if Manziel's playing, then people are going to be like, well, at least he's fun to watch. I mean, if they went 1-2 with Manziel, that'd be a win. But if they're 0-3 with Brian Hoyer, he's out. I mean, it's over.
By the way, listen, Cleveland goes to Pittsburgh in that week one game. If Manziel starts and wins, it's going to be crazier than anything Tim Tebow ever did, including beating the Steelers in the playoffs.
That would be bananas if he beats the Steelers in Pittsburgh. And it's a doable thing, too, right?
It can happen. Listen, this defense has some questions, the Steelers defense, and you never know what you're going to get. They start slow. They were 0-4 last year to start the season. They haven't won a preseason game since 2012. So they're not necessarily world beaters in September. So
right.
Dick LeBeau, he ain't no dummy. He said he's preparing for Manziel. partly because, you know, he wouldn't be surprised if he starts, but also because who prepares for Brian Hoyer?
That's right. I mean, I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm preparing for Brian Hoyer. I'm not preparing for, you know, like, just keep, brush your teeth, suck in oxygen, you know, do whatever exactly. You do. Speaking of the Steelers, ya boy, Dree Archer. Is it Dree or Dre?
Dree, baby.
It's Dree. As I pointed out, I think last week, I have him in multiple fantasy leagues.
Yeah, man. Who's the other guy you have?
Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, you both are the little guys.
Well, I thought Todd Haley was a bit excessive in his praise for Archer when he pointed out that he's a smaller or a lighter Jamal Charles. But I'll tell you what, and I texted you when that play happened, but Archer had that 46-yard catch and run on a very nicely designed double screen move where Ben Roethlisberger looks right to Marcus Wheaton. And then once the defense floods to Wheaton on the screen, he dumped it right back to Archer on the other side. Archer got into space, and he really did look like Jamal Charles. I mean, he floats and bursts like a running back you would like, but he can play wide receiver. He's going to be a really dangerous weapon for them.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't a super complicated play design. It didn't require a lot of moving parts. It was just Roethlisberger looks in the way and throws a little 8-yard pass. And Dree Archer did the rest.
Right, right. But you know what I'm saying with Wheaton is that, I don't know if you went back and watched it, but Wheaton came in on a screen on the right side, empty backfield for Roethlisberger. He didn't, like, pump fake or anything. He just turned and looked at Wheaton.
Right.
And the Giants' defense, maybe that's their problem, but they bit that way. I just think when you – we were talking about this, how this group of receivers and running backs really fits Todd Haley's scheme. So all of a sudden, you know, for all the belly aching we've had about Todd Haley the last few years, suddenly the Steelers – and for as much as they say they want to just pound the rock. They have this personnel on offense. I think fits what they want to do.
No, absolutely. And like I said last week, Mike Munchak is going to make the offensive line better. The first team looked pretty good. Le'Veon Bell came out, rushed for 9 yards and 8 yards in the first two carries. So that's something to consider. LeGarrette Blount. So there are a lot of moving pieces. It's not just going to be Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, which I hope will be a huge improvement. Although, look, they went 6-2 in the second half of the season, and I think. Our buddy Chris Wesson at NFL.com, I think he tweeted this out a couple days ago. They outscored in the second half of the season. They scored more points than the Saints did.
Really? I didn't realize that.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
He's picking Roethlisberger for MVP this year.
Yeah, he's hopping on the Steelers bandwagon, which makes me feel good because usually
Wes knows what he's talking about, yeah. Look, I mean, if you're a pundit looking for a sleeper, you know, if you don't want to be the guy who goes Steelers, you know, Broncos, Seahawks again,
yeah,
which is dumb because Super Bowl rematches don't happen much, you know, and you don't want to ride chalk. I like the Saints myself, but I mean, if you don't want to ride chalk, the Steelers are a pretty nice pick in a division that's a little bit down compared to where it is normally. You know, Geno Atkins coming off an injury, new regime, offensive regime in Cincinnati. Yeah, you know, the Browns, Johnny Manziel.
All right, let me ask you about this. We talked about it last week to open the podcast. We might as well bring it up again. So Peter King talked to the league office about this whole what's his name?
For somebody who doesn't want to talk about this, I didn't see. Did Peter King talk to him about him?
He talked to the front, not the front office, the NFL HQ, and they haven't received any complaints about Blandino being on the bus. Blandino's ahead of the officials. He was on the Cowboys bus riding around town. And I guess it was, quote unquote, kind of part of his job to you know, schmooze with the higher ups.
Right.
I don't know where that would be in that job description instead of officials, but whatever. But apparently it's not a big deal in the league's eyes. I would assume it's not a big deal because they don't want to make it a big deal. But our buddy Lock and Ford wrote about how several executives were pissed off about it. But why aren't they lodging complaints then? My theory is this, that this it's a small group and they're probably jealous of certain you know, of certain things, and that sort of pisses them off, and I get that.
I thought you were done.
No, yeah, I should have been done, because that's my sort of takeaway. I never thought it was a big deal. I hate to agree with Florio, but I think he's right. It's not really a big deal. I don't know, maybe Drew Rosenhaus is on the bus, too. But
Jay Glazer was there. The Schmedium shirt joke was funny by Florio.
That was hysterical.
I agree with you. I mean, it's – so let's say it's – you know, I mean, like, whatever hypothetical GM or, you know, or front office person is talking to Lock and Fora, I mean, first of all, there's a reason they did it anonymously. I mean, second of all...
They were on the bus.
No, but I mean, if you're the guy who is mad about it, and that's totally understandable, because, and he said it's not execs that are in rival conferences, but I mean, if you're a... I mean, if you're an exec who's not thrilled about the way it looks, and that, I think that's fine if you're not thrilled about the way it looks, you know, you don't want to lodge that complaint formally. You know somebody's going to find out who lodged it. Like, the NFL is like, we got three complaints. I mean, they'll figure, somebody's going to, I mean, like, they'll, you know, Dean Blandino can go and find out who lodged it. So it's not like, you know, and the fact of the matter is, as you pointed out, that Blandino's done a very good job in his as head of officiating. This was a mistake by him, though. I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right.
Just be like, I'll meet y'all there.
I'll take a cab without a big star on the side of it.
I mean, or at the very least, don't, like, have this bleep-eating grin on your face you're coming off like, hey, everybody, have you seen my buddy Jay Glazer?
It's like walking out of a strip club and your wife's standing there. You have that look on your face.
Yeah, except he's smiling. Like,
Well, that's because he's so happy. He just saw a bunch of boobies.
That's right. Yeah, right. You're always grinning coming out of a strip club, and you're like, hey, honey, what are you?
Right. That's a hypothetical. I'm not saying Blandino was at a strip club. Yeah, no, he shouldn't have been in that situation. I agree with that. I'm glad he's not losing his job, because I would have felt awful if the guy lost his job for doing something stupid. That level stupid. And there were people that we are buddies with that were calling for him to get fired outside of CBS. And I was like, let's just take a deep breath and quit being crazy.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Move on to.
He's not the first NFL person, not the last NFL person to be on the Cowboys bus.
That's right. Anyway, I heard that Roger Goodell is going to give him 2-game suspension, so it's all good. So moving on to other Cowboys matters. For some reason, I have no idea why, Jerry Jones decided to talk about these god-awful pictures he took with some strippers in a Dallas restaurant bathroom. Why he decided to talk about it, I have no idea. He said he was quote-unquote misrepresented, and we all know what misrepresented means in this instance. why is he bringing this up? Well, I'm not bringing it up. Why is he even entertaining questions from the media about it?
Well, one, Jerry Jones can't stop talking.
That's why. Yeah.
Two, it's not like it's even with the Blandino thing. At least it was like, maybe that's not Dean Blandino. This is like,
right.
It's like the only way it could maybe the only way you could be more positive if it was Jerry Jones is if he was wearing like a 10-gallon hat and right. And like you saw like some pistols.
I hate Jimmy Johnson T-shirt.
Right, that's right. Yes, I mean, like, there's no way that Jerry Jones could say, that's not me grabbing that breast.
Oh, my gosh.
Making that creepy face into the mirror. I mean, unless you're trying to say it's a Photoshop, at which point, you know, stop.
Yeah. Apparently, the strippers didn't know they were being photographed by the third person who happened to be in the bathroom. It was part of some apparently some extortion plot.
Was it Dean Blandino?
It was the worst extortion plot ever. It's just it's so weird. That's another thing that I don't really care about. It's just something that, you know, people do a lot of weird things their own times. This is one of them that just happens to get out. Just don't talk about it. You did it. It's creepy, freaky. You didn't get extorted, I'm assuming. The picture's already out there, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
But don't even entertain the question. Someone asked Stephen Jones about the bus. He said, really, you're going to ask me about that? Are you serious?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, and granted, like, Stephen Jones is even more, you know, he's like, you're going to ask me about walking off the bus I ride around in? Like, do you want to come ask me about putting, like, it's like driving my car? I mean, this right. Jerry Jones thing's at least a little weirder, but the dude's just out skeezing.
Yeah, hey, he's trying to make a buck.
he's not trying to make a buck.
Yeah, he's just hustling, I mean, in general.
Right.
He's a businessman.
He's going to spend a buck is what he's doing.
Yeah, he may have. Allegedly. All right, enough with the stuff that I don't want to talk about. What about the Cowboys in general? They lost 27-7 to the Chargers. I'll be honest, I didn't watch 1 second of that game.
I did.
Brandon Whedon looked good, though, I heard.
Yeah.
Phil Rivers looked awesome.
So here was my main takeaway from that game with respect to the Cowboys is if you had to pick one team – and I wrote about this in sorting the preseason pile. If you had to pick one team that would simultaneously score the most points in the NFL and give up the most points, like you had to bet, if there were odds, I mean, the Cowboys would be like 1-5 favorites, I think. I mean, not because they're going to be the best offense, but their defense is that bad. I mean, they couldn't do anything against the Chargers. The Chargers ran 10 plays to get down to the 1-yard line, at which point Ryan Matthews jumped over the goal line, fumbled, and gave it back to the Cowboys.
But I did see the first drive, and they got eviscerated. Yep, and I saw Ryan Matthews right.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but I mean, those first 10 plays, only two of them didn't go over 5 yards. Now, the Chargers are a very good offense, and Philip Rivers is very smart, and they have lots of weapons.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they carved them up, and I think the Cowboys are going to get carved. The good news is their offensive line looked great. They were getting good push against the Chargers. Joseph Randall was running all over the place. Brandon Weeden had tons of time in the pocket to throw the ball, and that's a big plus. I mean, the Cowboys, you know, if Tony Romo can stay healthy, the Cowboys are going to score some points, and they're going to be able to run the ball. They're going to be able to pass the ball. They have the weapons. What do you think the odds are? Sigmund Bloom, who works for Football Guys and does mainly fantasy but is a knowledgeable football guy, tweeted that he could see, and I thought about this earlier that day when he tweeted it, but he said he was wondering about the possibility of the Cowboys just having a total meltdown season a la the Falcons or Giants last year. What do you think the odds are? What's the floor for the Cowboys in terms of wins?
Oh, they could win two games. I could see that.
Okay, all right, yeah. I think
listen,
it's possible.
If Romo gets hurt in the first game or second game and Weeden has to come in, I was just thinking about this while you were talking. Is Weeden better than Kyle Orton? I don't think he is.
No, he's not. I mean, in the preseason.
Exactly. You just have
hell
to tell
no, he's not better than Kyle Orton.
You have to convince him that every month is August.
That's right.
But, yeah, so, and you know, Orton had a chance to win some games last year. That one of the big games, I can't remember the end of the season that he lost.
Remember, Tony Romo didn't play in Week 17. They would have gone to the playoffs if he'd won.
Oh, that was the game he lost. Every year they lose in Week 17.
They're 8-7 going into the final week of the season. They lose in a game. They don't make the playoffs.
No, I can see them winning two games. And of course, Jason Garrett would get fired. Tony Romo would be let go, whether he got hurt or not, just because he'll be 35 at that point. And then the offseason will be insane. I mean, we could have something like one of these crazy Herschel Walker trades for Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was saying. Like four first-round picks for Johnny Manziel and it was like four first-round picks and Tony Romo for Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, or, you know, he tries to trade up or he tries to buy the Florida State Seminoles so he can have Jameis Winston. Just all sort of... It's just going to be weird. So if they win
by the way, this is what we should do in the offseason from now on. When we preview these teams,
what?
We need to start doing like best case, worst case type stuff.
That's a good idea.
And it's just like apoplectic, you know, like what happens in the apocalypse. And that'd be better than like.
So what's best case for the Cowboys? Are they going to win more than 8 games for the first time in 3 years?
No, I think 8.
4 years, yeah.
9-7 is the best case scenario, right?
Oh, I don't know if they can win 9 games.
But I mean, like that's their ceiling.
I don't know with this defense. If Tony Romo is completely healthy and plays every snap,
yes,
they might win 9, maybe, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. Like, if Tony Romo
is healthy, I don't feel comfortable saying 9.
I don't either, but I don't think you can cap them at 8. I mean, they could have won 9 last year. Their defense was terrible.
Yeah.
Their offensive, all right. Terrence Williams, Dez Bryant, Jason Witten, Tony Romo, DeMarco Murray, that really good offensive line, and Joseph Randall, they have enough offense to win the games that they can outscore some people and get lucky.
We'll see. How'd you feel about Kelvin Benjamin? He looked pretty good, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina Buffalo.
I was down on Benjamin when the Panthers drafted him. And I mean, I just saw, like, watching the tape from that Florida game, he looked at times like the best wide receiver in the history of football, and just because of his size and everything. But then at times he makes some of the worst drops. And I didn't think it made a lot of sense for the Panthers to go out and get a guy who might be that raw, might be that big of a project. It looks, and it's early, but it looks like he is, you know, going to at least have a shot at maximizing his potential. That catch he made, that touchdown catch he made.
Fantastic.
I mean, how many people can do that?
Here's the thing about him. He's 6'5 and 240, but he doesn't play like a fat person.
Right.
He's super nimble. It's sort of like my theory on fat guys in comedy, like Chris Farley. who are the other ones I mentioned we were talking about the other day? Chris Farley, Megan McCarthy, who I love.
Megan McCarthy.
She's on. She was in Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
She's in this movie called The Heat that I'd never heard of, but I watched on HBO.
Yeah,
with,
you have to be nimble. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be nimble. He has that.
he's not fat.
No, but he's a big guy. You know, he's
tall
like
and really skinny. Right.
Yeah, he's like Clinton Portis's nickname used to be Booty Doo, and it was because his butt sticks out farther than his tummy do. And that's what Kelvin Benjamin is. But he's nimble. Mike Williams, who's a similar size, who was drafted by the Lions back in 05, was not that athletic. And that was a huge difference. And I think that if Benjamin can sort of continue to do that while catching the ball, I mean, like you said, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, and I just think that, like, if you look at where the ball was, so he...
Kevin James is another fat guy. He's funny.
He's not funny.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I guess he's amusing. Frank Caliendo?
he's a very serious type on that scale.
That's right. But if you look at where that ball was, so Benjamin is trying to break left to shake off a cornerback. He slips. I think it was Stephon Gilmore too, actually. He slips and goes down to his left. The ball is being thrown by Derek Anderson to the right. When he falls and hits the ground, at that point in time, he's at least like 10 feet You know, he's lying on the ground. Like, one hand, motion has stopped. And, I mean, he's not, like, lying flat, but he's still, you know, he's still moving. He's trying to recover, but he's 10 feet away from where the ball is going to land. And he doesn't have very long to get it. Somehow he recovers and makes this unbelievable grab. And I think that this is what I've been harping on. This is why he is going to be a big factor for the Panthers' offense, because he's going to be so good in the red zone. And he's going to make them way more efficient in the red zone than they were before. You can throw it up to him, even if he's not a 1,000-yard receiver, and I don't expect that he will be. Even if he's not a 750-yard receiver, he's going to score a bunch of touchdowns.
Yeah, and you mentioned on the last podcast that the red zone is sort of – they kind of sputter up and down the field, and they try to take advantage of their opportunities when they get them,
yeah.
And they're not always there. So this just enhances the probability they'll be able to actually score when they get down there, as opposed to throwing to Steve Smith or Dominic Hicks and whoever happens to be on the field.
Yeah, exactly. And look, Jericho Contry, like we said, caught 10 touchdowns last year. He didn't. He only started 6 games.
Yeah, no, that's right. And once he and Cam get on the same page, again, sky's the limit.
That's right.
Not really. Okay, look, let's talk quickly, because I know you got something to do here. Let's talk quickly.
I got 15 minutes.
Sorry. Yeah, these rookie quarterbacks in the Oakland-Minnesota game. I thought Teddy Bridgewater looked good in his first appearance. People were killing me afterwards. He didn't set the world on fire, but I thought, based on what we saw at that pro day and how he was murdered afterwards because he didn't have gloves on and he looked soft and all other nonsense, I thought he showed a lot of poise. He looked good in the pocket. He made some decisive throws. The first play of the game, I don't know if you saw it, his first play of the game was roll out right. He threw a seed to Greg Jennings on the sidelines.
Call back for a penalty.
Call back on a penalty, but that was a wonderful play. Derek Carr, I thought, looked pretty good, too. He did well on short passes, but that's all he threw in college. Not so good on longer passes, sort of like Brian Hoyer. Matt Schaub looked like doo-doo. Matt Castle looked great. What are your thoughts on the quarterbacks in that game?
I started to watch that game last night, and I watched most of Bridgewater's, did not get to Carr. I was trying to plow through Bridgewater because I'd read somewhere, I think it was on CBS, that Bridgewater looked good, and I was surprised when he didn't look that great. I agree. That first throw was great. That first throw was awesome. His night, though, was not overwhelmingly impressive from a standpoint of him completing passes and him making the right throws. Now, having said that, I thought that the way that he comported himself on the field was indicative of a guy who was not at all overwhelmed.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. And also,
right.
Consider how low that bar was set after that pro day. People were killing that guy.
Right. Well, and now remember, it's since been ramped up really high for some ridiculous reason because people are stupid, right? People are stupid and crazy. But I don't think that I don't see any reason why you would start Matt Castle or Christian Ponder this season, because I don't think the Vikings have a really high ceiling in terms of games they're going to win, and it doesn't make any sense to me to trot one of those guys out there. And instead of letting Bridgewater get out there and play, especially when he's the most pro-ready guy in this class.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Mike Zimmer's in his first year, and coaches are so conservative by nature, and they want to win. They're not ones to plan for the future so much. So that's how I could see Castle starting. It wouldn't be the worst thing, but in terms of it doesn't help Teddy Bridgewater's development. And I agree. Put him out there. I'll take the old Pete Prisco line, let him play. But if Castle starts the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, yeah.
Now, when Carr, I really just didn't see any of Carr. I was like midnight or 11:30 last night. I was running through the preseason live and looking at it. What was his final stat line? I didn't see it.
Oh, let me look it up. But I will say this. This is what I wrote about him. He reminded me of his style of play of Andy Dalton.
Is that a compliment?
Well, that's what I said. I don't know if this is a blast or not. The guy just signed a 6-year, $115 million deal. David Carr was 10 of 16 for 74 yards. He threw an interception. He rolled left, kind of got a little pressure, and overthrew, I think, a running back in the flat. I think either got tipped or just got picked off outright. It wasn't a great play, obviously, but he was fine. He struggled down the field, but that's what you expect for guys who never really throw the ball down the field and who are rookies. So his numbers were certainly on paper better than Bridgewater's. But I thought Bridgewater, as you pointed out, was more poised. That's sort of what I was looking for. I mean, yeah, he didn't throw for 300 yards, but I didn't expect him to.
Well, the flashback to the Panthers and Cam Newton's preseason. I remember that Jimmy Clausen was A, ahead of Cam Newton on the depth chart when the preseason started, and B, Newton looked terrible. Preseason is not about putting up eye-popping stats. It's about testing these guys in ways that will prepare them for the regular season. Like, anybody could go out there and run crossing routes in the preseason – you know, run 100 crossing routes and put up, you know, go 12 for 13 for 5,000. You know what I mean? Like, anybody can do that because the defenses aren't trying either. But you have to prepare them for situations and kind of throw them into the fire, so to speak.
No, that's right. I'm going to segue here. Speaking of not trying at all, what about that Houston offense?
Yeah, that's not good.
32-0 against a very, very good Cardinals team. But again, we're talking about the preseason where people are more on level footing than they are in the regular season when you kind of take the gloves off.
I mean, like, as an example of preseason, Logan Thomas went 12 of 13, I think.
He's never completed 12 out of 13 passes in his life.
No, exactly. That was the biggest day he's ever had. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 6 of 14, 55 yards. Some dude named Jay Grimes, 10 rushes, 39 yards.
You missed the biggest part of that Fitzpatrick line, 2 picks in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Bill O'Brien, you're pretty terrified, right?
Well, he called the effort, quote-unquote, terrible and unacceptable.
But what are they going to do about a quarterback?
Well, listen. Why is this a surprise? On what planet is Matt Schaub, Ryan Fitzpatrick, a huge upgrade over Matt Schaub?
Well, no planet, but I mean, they did it for cap reasons, right? I mean, like, because they were like, we're just not paying Matt Schaub $9 million.
That's fine. And look, someone actually tweeted this at me and at the CBS Sports account Saturday night about Fitzpatrick. They said, good, and I hope that they regret never taking Johnny Manziel with that pick. But you can't take Johnny Manziel first overall, no matter how well he plays in a preseason game. But the bottom line is they still don't have a quarterback. And Fitzpatrick, he is not even as good as Alex Smith in terms of the kind of bridge quarterback
mentality.
So he can play a year, but you're still going to win 4 games.
Yeah, you're not winning a lot of games if you have Ryan Fitzpatrick at your behind the line. No, so here's the question. So the guy that they were theoretically tied to, because Bill O'Brien was his old coordinator, Ryan Mallett, they didn't make a trade for. Bill Belichick probably wants more than anybody's willing to pay for Mallett. But then he looked like crap in the preseason, too. I mean, he looked terrible against the Redskins, who don't have a very good defense, and he just didn't look prepared to be an NFL quarterback given the amount of time that he's played. Maybe he was nervous or whatever. Go get Kirk Cousins.
Oh, God, everyone's talking about Kirk Cousins. I wrote about it yesterday.
Because Mike Reese of ESPN Boston stirring up the pot. But objective observers from the Patriots say they thought that Kirk Cousins looked better, and Kirk Cousins looked pretty good in that preseason game.
Yeah. I'm not trading a second-round pick for him.
No, I'd call and offer a fourth.
I would just start Case Keenum. Is he better than Case Keenum?
Who, Ryan Fitzpatrick or
Kirk Cousins?
You know, I think a lot about Kirk Cousins, too, though, depends on maybe Kirk Cousins is just a better fit for Jay Gruden's system. Or maybe he's a good fit for Jay Gruden. You know what I mean? Like he and Andy Dalton are...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, listen.
Brothers from a different hair-colored mother.
That's right. Jay Gruden was in the room when the Bengals decided to take Andy Dalton over Colin Kaepernick. He went with the very next pick.
Yeah.
And Kaepernick's much more like RG3 than Andy Dalton or Kirk Cousins. So maybe that has something to do with it. But listen,
Jay Gruden's just a racist. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
just kidding. Jay Gruden is not a racist. We're joking. No, it's funny, though, that he blew up and that Colt McCoy blew up, too. I mean, just scrappy quarterback you over there.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know what the Texans do. This part of the problem is that you name Ryan Fitzpatrick the starter out of the gate, and O'Brien sort of backtracked on that yesterday. I think you sort of have to. You're not starting Tom Savage, the fourth round pick at any point, or fifth round pick, whatever he was. No. But I think Case Keenum's a real possibility, and maybe sooner than later.
But I mean, Case Keenum didn't win a single game last year, I don't think.
Well, they shouldn't have won any games. No,
they're in trouble. They're in trouble.
They started 2-0, so he didn't win a game.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they're let's see. The Green Bay game was underwater. I don't care about that. Saints, Rams. I
actually didn't watch that either somehow. I've got that.
Boring.
Was that on?
Breeze didn't play, and neither did Bradford. Michael Sam played, but I don't care about Fort.
Cook scored. That's on my list to go back and watch.
He had a nice touchdown. That was nice. Yeah. Nick Foles looked terrible against the Bears. I'm not worried about that. I don't know if you are.
That's the other thing. I mean, like I said, on the list. Actually, I'm going to add the Bears because I want to see what that Bears defensive line looks like. I think that
Mark Sanchez played like Brandon Whedon, which is also noteworthy.
Because if that Bears defensive line is good, then all of a sudden the Bears are a scary team.
Yeah, and Cutler looked good in the first few series too, so that's noteworthy. Also, I thought Ryan Tannehill looked good in his newfangled offense. That has him getting the ball out quicker. It's more of a spread look. The Falcons looked okay, not great. Matt Ryan looked like Matt Ryan, but there's some issues with that defense.
That defense is going to be bad.
Yeah, so
they would be the team I would pit up against the Cowboys for most points scored, most points allowed.
Yeah, did you say last week you liked the Panthers better than the Falcons?
Yes.
All right, I might have to get on that bat. Although whenever we get on your bandwagon, it goes right off the cliff. So
I think the Panthers. And by the way, the other team that we should talk about, and I don't even know who they played. Or the Bucks played the Jaguars, and everybody's coming out. Talking about the Jaguars' defensive line looking good. Well, let's point out that the Bucks' offensive line is a major problem. They lost a lot of people, and if they can't protect Josh McCown. And Josh McCown isn't any good. That team's going to stink this year.
Jamon Meredith was one of the starting guards. O'Neal Cousins, the other starting guard. Those are two guys that were cut by the Steelers and the Ravens.
Jeez Louise.
Team's not known for their offensive lines. So those were the starters. Jamon Meredith's already been demoted. And here, look, this goes back to what I said last week. On paper, Tampa Bay looked awesome in terms of who they acquired. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. But if you're not blocking for anyone, it doesn't matter. So that's a good point. Both defensive lines look really good. The first teams, Blake Bortles looked really sharp. I thought
Tampa Bay's defense is going to be great. I mean, Lovie Smith knows who he's doing. They have Devin McCourty, he's a cover two corner. They have Levante David, who's a perfect fit for that system. But look,
they have what's his name from Alton Verner.
Yeah, Verner. Did I say McCourty? Do they have McCourty?
I don't know. Do they? Where did he go? Did he go there?
Maybe I've been yelling about McCourty and I meant Verner. I think McCourty stayed. They've got Verner.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I've definitely said that on the radio at some point.
I believed it.
Yeah. Hey, that's all right. Yeah, I meant Verner. Jeez. Glad you said that. Anyway, people are just blindly assuming the Panthers are going to be the worst team in the NFC South, right?
Yeah, no, I am, but I might come back.
They might finish second in that division.
They could. Yeah, you're right. I'm not closing that book just yet. All right. Anything else?
I think that's pretty good for me.
Jets, Colts, but the Jets suck. We know that. We'll talk about them later.
Yeah, we can circle back through. There'll be more. This is recapping the preseason. People are hot and bothered about everything.
Yeah. So we'll come back Wednesday for the slate of games coming up and then go from there.
All right. Sounds good. Make sure to subscribe via iTunes to the Eye on Football podcast. We are committed to bringing you a full season's worth of coverage here in podcast land. For Ryan Wilson, I am Will Brinson. We will talk to you guys soon.